Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. When a rock star writes a memoir, you know what you want from it. And Graham Nash of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young delivers. Lurid tales of sex and drugs and rock and roll and being on the open seas with David Crosby and a boat full of guns. He'll join us in just a moment. We've also got three new records for your fall playlist. And the band Kneebody is here to play live. No one knows what their name means, and no one knows how to categorize their mix of jazz, indie, and jam band styles, but people sure do like it. That's a lot to look forward to. First, a look back.
Came here with wild tales from the east, about the floods that are rushing round your door, about your old lady who up and walked away from your feast. You can't get her back no more. So
for more than 50 years, we've been hearing from the singer, songwriter, and musician Graham Nash, from his time in the Hollies to his work in Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young to his solo career. Graham Nash has had his own way of seeing the world. The Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, inducted twice, in fact, tells his story in a new book called Wild Tales, A Rock and Roll Life. He joins me in the studio today. Graham Nash, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you, John. How are you?
I'm a little surprised, as I'm sure many other people are to this day, to learn that you, a member of that most American of bands, CSNY, are British.
Indeed.
Are people, do you still find, do you get that still? I didn't know you were British.
The only time it really comes home is when I go home to Manchester and my family think I talk like a Yank. That's the only time that I have to start figuring out, you know, what my accent is, you know.
Yeah. So, you know, the move from, and it wasn't just Manchester, it was Salford.
Yes.
Which is the same area that the guys in Joy Division would later come from.
And also Oasis.
And Oasis, so what's, I mean, what's in the water there or in the air?
Maybe it's not the water, John.
There, I mean, it's quite a concentration of music that's come out of that that sort of suburb of Manchester.
Yeah.
Where people had a hard scrabble life, it
absolutely.
Seems.
After World War II, there was nothing for 15, 16-year-old kids to do. I mean, kick a ball around, you know, but there was nothing to do. But then skiffle came along.
Now, that's a term that you mention in the book, and you know, people will maybe remember Lonnie Donegan, but here in America, I don't think the skiffle thing was that big.
Well, you see, because it was a relatively cheap form of music to make, it was very big in England because there was no money after World War II. You couldn't even get butter and milk and eggs, you know, without government coupons. I mean, it was really, really tough. And Salford, I found out recently, is one of the largest slums in England. But I didn't know. I mean, you know, nobody had money where I was, so it wasn't like a big deal.
Right.
But yes, Lonnie Donegan and skiffle saved our early lives, which then, of course, drifted into American rock and roll.
Right. So skiffle was sort of a predecessor to...
Absolutely.
Buddy Holly and the Everly Brothers, that American invasion.
Absolutely.
Which and then you, produced and, the yeah. British invasion here.
Well, you know, I mean, the British people just took all the American music and did it their way and sold it right back to the Americans.
So your childhood was basically driven by a couple of sort of passions. One was music.
Yes.
The other, photography.
Yes.
And in fact, the both front and back covers of your book, these are self-portraits that you've taken, right?
Indeed.
And you've got the camera here in the studio, so you never go anywhere without the camera.
The only times I didn't have my camera, Elvis came back on the back of an elephant, and I was upset with myself.
We're speaking with Graham Nash on Soundcheck. Now, both in songwriting and in photography, you have two different ways of kind of documenting the world. Has that been, I mean, that the 14-year-old you was probably not writing songs to document the world.
No, I was not. But I was taking photographs to document the world. The first real serious portrait in my book, Eye to Eye, of my photographs was a portrait I took of my mother when I was 10. So, and I knew from an early age that I saw differently. I wasn't taking pictures of kittens with balls of wool or stuff to match the couch. I was taking interesting shots, and I knew it even when I was a young kid.
And you write that, you know, one of your best-known songs, Teach Your Children, has a photograph as its source.
It has two photographs. One of them was Boy in Central Park by Diane Arbus, a very, very famous New York photographer and a very famous image. And the next one that was next to it at this exhibit of my collection was a portrait of Krupp, the German arms magnate. Mm-hmm. And when I was looking at these two images, I realized that if we really didn't teach our children a better way of dealing with their fellow human beings, that the very humanity was in jeopardy.
So in this case, the song is kind of a way of documenting at least a portion of the world.
And don't forget, it's a two-way street. You've got a lot to learn, you know, from your children as well as teaching them.
From the 1970 album Deja Vu by Crosby, Stills, and Nash, this is Teach Your Children.
You are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh.
From the 1970 album Deja Vu by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, that is Teach Your Children. Graham Nash, the singer-songwriter, founding member of both Crosby, Stills, and Nash and the Hollies and CSNY and the Y, the Neil Young,
yes.
Coming. Is he in the band? Is he not? And that's one of the many through stories in your book.
Indeed. But, you know, Neil is a consummate musician, and he understands that when he writes a song that calls for harmony, he knows exactly where to go.
Yeah. And, in fact, the story of Ohio, of the Kent State shootings, and Neil, I think you say, he walks away for half an hour and comes back with this song sort of fully formed.
Yeah.
The postscript to that story, and that story is pretty well known, but the postscript that you describe in the book that isn't so well known is you ask Ahmet Erdogan, the guy who runs the record company, to pull your song, which is about to become number one, so that you can release Ohio.
That's right. It was that song, Teach Your Children, that you just heard. We had it going up into the charts. The slaughter of the four students at Kent State on May 4th in 1970 was a dreadful experience for us. And we realized that if America started to kill its own children, then our statement about Ohio, or Neil's song, of course, was much more important than having a hit single with my song, Teach Your Children.
Graham Nash is with us on Soundcheck today. His book is called Wild Tales, A Rock and Roll Life. And it begins with the idea of harmony. I mean, it seems very early on, whether it was singing in church or, you know, playing with your friends who would eventually become the Hollies, that it wasn't just a voice. It was always two or
harmony.
Three.
Yeah, always harmony.
Why?
I had a music teacher, Hugh Jones, at school. And he would play all medieval chants and strange music. And it was always this combination of voices that attracted me. How each voice, each inflection, each breath makes harmony a greater thing than just the voices themselves. I've always been attracted to harmony.
Mm-hmm. And the Everly Brothers, you know.
My heroes.
You were in that sweet spot, you know, teenager, and they're on the radio. On Radio Luxembourg, right?
Indeed, yes.
Which was...
But I have three very quick stories about the Everly Brothers. April 22nd, 1960, they come to Manchester. Me and Alan Clark are determined to meet them. We miss our last bus home. It's miserable weather. We don't care. 1:30 in the morning, they come out of a nightclub. Well, you know, me and my friend Alan, we play your songs, and we want to be in the business, and we want to be making music. They encouraged us. 6 years later, the Hollies are singing with them in the studio on an album called Two Yanks in England. And then in 1992, I got to sing three-part with the Everly Brothers on a beautiful song called So Sad in Toledo, Ohio in 1992. Wow. And I just found the cassette, and it will be on the e-book of Wild Tales.
Ah, very nice. Now, the first of those stories, the one of you and Alan meeting the Everly Brothers after that show, they don't just encourage you. They ask you, are you any good? And you say, well, we think we are. And yeah. They're like, yeah, well, then you got to keep going at it.
Got to keep doing it.
And you write that, you know, they spent like 40 minutes with you guys and that you hoped that if you ever did become that famous, that you would be as nice to your fans as the Everly Brothers
yes,
were to you.
It affected me deeply. And I realized that in a way, we're all trying to touch the flame. We're all trying to get as close to the point of creation as possible without getting burned. Mm. And there was me and Alan Clark and Don and Phil Everly alone talking on the steps of the Midland Hotel in Manchester. It was a dream for me. And I decided from that day that people really want eye contact. They really want to know whether you've committed to contacting them. You know, rather than just patting them on the head and signing an autograph and moving on. They really affected me deeply.
Bye-bye, love. Bye-bye, happiness. Hello, loneliness. I think I'm gonna cry. Bye-bye, love. Bye-bye, sweet caress. Hello, emptiness. I feel like I could die. Bye-bye, my love, goodbye. There goes my baby with someone new. She sure looks happy, I sure am blue. She was my baby till he stepped in. Goodbye to romance that might have been. Bye-bye.
Bye Bye Love from the Everly Brothers, late 50s hit from them here in the States and in England. Formative influence, as I say, on Graham Nash, founding member of Crosby, Stills and Nash and CSNY and the Hollies. His new memoir is called Wild Tales, A Rock and Roll Life, here with me in the Soundcheck studio. There are many lives that, you know, sort of are intertwined here. And harmony did not necessarily translate into harmonious relationships with everybody.
No, they didn't. No.
So David Crosby, Neil Young coming and going, Joni Mitchell, also a major player. She is notoriously private.
Indeed.
Did you have any reticence, any hesitance about going into such detail about your relationship with her?
No, I believe that Joni is a woman, you know, and Crosby is a man, and they fess up to what they did. You know, one of my main concerns was Crosby because he has been such an important part of my life for so many years and my deep, deep beloved friend for many, many years. And to see him spiraling down into cocaine madness was very, very difficult for me, not only emotionally, but of course musically.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're pretty upfront about your own drug use as well, although you basically kicked everything in the 80s, right?
Yeah, 84. December the 9th,
1984. Mm-hmm. You were talking a moment ago about, you know, meeting the Everly Brothers and how everybody wants to be sort of close to that flame without getting burned. At some point, all of you got burned.
Yes, we did.
So, but you write that, you know, smoking a joint, snorting a line of coke was the way you guys would begin a session or a songwriting.
Every day, every morning. That's how we would start our day.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Because you felt it was good for the creative process.
No, because it just felt good then. It just felt good then. You know, and it was so wrapped up in the times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I first came to California and it was sunny and the phone rang exactly as it did in the movies and takeout food and great hamburgers and just people having a fantastic time thinking that they could do anything. And that's what we believed.
Mm-hmm. So in a song like Marrakesh Express, I mean, you know, I know that some people sort of read into anything that had to do with Marrakesh and Morocco that it was all about drugs.
Yes.
Is that true?
Not really. Not really.
That's a very qualified answer.
No,
Graham.
Because I'd been reading books on the beat poets, Allen Ginsberg and William Burroughs, and you know, when you analyze everything that they were doing, it appeared that all they were doing was smoking dope every day in Marrakesh and writing poetry, and that sounded very appealing to me. Mm-hmm. So I decided to retrace that journey. So I did take the train from Casablanca down to Marrakesh, and I was in the first-class compartment with, you know, 2 5-foot, you know, older ladies with their gray hair dyed blue, and me going back to the third-class compartment where it was really happening. Ducks and pigs and chickens and people lighting fires and cooking food. That's where it was happening. And then I went back to my first-class compartment and wrote Marrakesh Express.
This was from the 1969 self-titled album by Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Traveling the train through clear Moroccan skies, ducks and pigs and chickens call, animal carpet wall to wall, American ladies 5 foot tall and blue, sweeping cobwebs from the edges of my mind. To get away to see what we could find. Hope the days that lie ahead bring us back to where they've led. Listen not to what's been said to you. Would you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? Would you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? They're taking me to Marrakesh, all on board the train, all on board. Saving all my money just to take you there. I smell the garden in your hair.
Just a little bit of the Marrakesh Express. Marrakesh Express, a 1969 single from the album Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Graham Nash is with me on Soundcheck. His book is called Wild Tales, A Rock and Roll Life. I'm suddenly, you know, stunned again by the cover, both the cover.
I know, it's kind of interesting,
front
isn't
and back.
It? Well, on the front, I look so hopeful and so, you know, looking forward into the future. And on the back, I look a little crusty, I'm afraid. But, you know, there's a 50-year period there.
Yeah. So is the cover shot, is this you before coming to the States?
No. This is me about 4 years after I came.
Okay.
I came here in December of 1968. That portrait was taken in 73.
What was it that drove the move? Because
Music.
Had a band, you had a wife, you had a whole life
in
England.
I had an incredible life. The Hollies were a fabulous band. We had many, many top 10 records, you know, and people thought I was crazy. You're leaving the bloody Hollies, are you kidding? All that fame and women and stuff. But I'd heard me and David and Steven sing together, and I wanted that sound. We were good harmony bands.
Yeah.
The Springfield and the Birds and the Hollies were good harmony bands.
Mm-hmm.
This was something different that neither me or David or Stephen had heard before. We have no claim on the notes, but you can't sound like me and David and Stephen.
How did you and David and Stephen sound like you and David and Stephen if everybody was like high and coked up? And
The truth is that whatever sound vocally that CSN has was born in about 30 seconds. It took that long, only 30 seconds, for us to strike that blend, realize what it was, and start laughing in the middle of the song.
So was this the first time you met was it at Joni Mitchell's house?
That wasn't the first time that we'd met. That was the first time we ever sang together.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, slightly different. I'd known David earlier when he came to England with the Birds, and I took pity on him because, you know, they were getting slagged by the journalists because the promoter made a huge mistake. He called them the American Beatles.
Oof.
You can't do that in England, I'm afraid. So he was getting a hard time, and I invited him to come and stay at my apartment.
Mm-hmm.
He then introduced me to Stephen in Peter Tork's house on Mulholland Drive in Los Angeles. And then I came from London to be with Joni, and David and Stephen were at dinner, and that was the night that we first sang together.
And literally it took, they
40 seconds.
They sang it twice by themselves, and you
asked
them
to sing.
Well,
they sang it once by themselves, and I told them it was a great song, which it obviously is, a beautiful song, You Don't Have to Cry by Stephen. I asked them to sing it a second time, and then I said, bear with me, do it one more time. And I'd learned the words, the phrasing, how everybody was breathing, what their body language was. And that's when it was born.
And it continues to this day. I mean, you know, it's been an on and off thing. And when you
add... Well, we don't think so.
Hmm?
No, we always had this idea of forming a mothership where we could all come together to make music. But then after that was solidified and an entity unto itself, then we could branch off and make music with whoever we wanted to. And it's always been that way. So people say, well, you broke up. Ah, you got back together. Oh, you broke up. We never felt that.
Hmm. And you, of course, have been making solo records for many, many years. Wild Tales.
Yes, indeed.
Not just the name of your memoir.
No,
but
that was my second album, yes.
Back in
72? 73, I
think. Okay. And what's happening now? I mean, are you getting a chance to, you know, have shows of your art, your photography?
Yes, doing it all. My father was dead at 46. So I've been living a very full life ever since that moment when I realized that the birds didn't stop singing and the clouds didn't stop moving when my father died. It was shocking to me. And I've been trying to live literally two lives at the same time. And I intend to fill my life with good stuff every second of my life until I'm dead.
Well, so maybe there are more Wild Tales still to be written.
Yes, there are.
Graham Nash's book is called Wild Tales, A Rock and Roll Life. Graham, a real pleasure to have you with us.
My pleasure, John. Thank you.
In the long run, it will make you cry, make you crazy, old before your time. And the difference between
If you enjoy our conversations with folks like Graham Nash here on Soundcheck, and if you want to listen to the show on the go, just take it with you. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or download these interviews from our website, soundcheck.org. Coming up, music critic Sophie Harris of Time Out New York is here with three new releases she thinks you should check out. And later, a band we think you should hear. The super smart, hard to pin down quintet known as Kneebody. They'll play live in our studio. This is Soundcheck. Nearly every week on soundcheck.org, we give you an exclusive sneak peek at a new album before it comes out. This week's check ahead comes from Stevie Weinstein Foner, the Brooklyn-based musician who records, thankfully, under the name SWF. His upcoming album is called Let It Be Told, and it recalls the lo-fi pop sounds of bands like Galaxy 500 or Neutral Milk Hotel. You can read more about SWF and stream the entire new album on soundcheck.org. Here's a preview. This is the title track from Let It Be Told. That's the title track from Let It Be Told, the new album from SWF, the artist otherwise known as Stevie Weinstein Foner. Stream the whole thing now before it comes out next week. It's this week's Check Ahead at soundcheck.org. Okay, now, speaking of new music, let's talk about stuff that's out now. Joining me here in the studio with some of her recent favorites is Sophie Harris, music critic for Time Out New York. Sophie, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Hey, John, it's lovely to be here.
So what you been listening to this fall?
What have I been listening to? The picks that we're about to pick, most definitely. The first one, Haim, actually, I've been listening to slightly against my will because it's one of these bands who... I mean, you must have had this, John, working in music, where there's so much hype around a band that you kind of avoid them and you just think, ugh.
I actually know exactly what you're talking about because, you know, we booked them to come in here and it was like, all right, now we'll see what all the fuss is about. They were great.
They're so good.
They were really good.
And so, and you must have had this as well, where a colleague specifically keeps going on and saying, you should listen to this, you should listen to this. And then you watch it and you think, oh no, they're brilliant. So Hank, back at Timeout. Yes, they are extremely good. This record is worth the hype.
So the album's called Days Are Gone. I heard a lot of kind of 80s stuff, right?
There's a lot of 80s stuff going on. And the thing that makes me so excited about this band is it feels like a very genuine love of the 80s. People talk a lot about Fleetwood Mac.
Right,
and kind of 80s Fleetwood Mac. And again, what's cool about them really is, to me, it seems like Christine McVie Fleetwood Mac. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of, it's niche-y, which makes me sort of believe it more. It also, though, it's kind of shamelessly 80s in places. It's all those funny little 80s gems. And I think probably what will allow them really big success at the moment is that there is this kind of void for a pop rock band. We've got a lot of pop at the moment, got a lot of rock. But this is shameless pop rock, and it's great.
So we're talking about Haim, H-A-I-M. The album's Days Are Gone. You want to pick a track for us?
Yeah, I'm going to go for Baby Don't Save Me.
The song's called Don't Save Me from the California band Haim, one of Sophie Harris's fall favorites. The album called Days Are Gone, and they played here in the Soundcheck studio, made believers out of us as well. You can find their live session on our website, soundcheck.org. Sophie Harris, music writer for Time Out New York, here with some of her fall picks. What else you got?
What else have I got? I've got Nico Case. A woman whose voice is the sound of autumn, I might even say. That beautiful, like, golden richness, you know? So she's back with a very unwieldily titled album called The Worse Things Get, The Harder I Fight, The Harder I Fight, The More I Love You, which, as I say, is unwieldy, but it really fits the record so beautifully. This is her first album in 4 years, and she's had, by all accounts, a very rough time. In those 4 years, she lost both her parents, with whom she had a very difficult relationship anyway, and her grandma. So it's a very personal record. There's more about her and fewer storytelling songs. But it's also really aggressive in places, almost violent, and you can hear her sort of punk roots coming out in some of those songs.
Well, even the earlier records, these supposedly alt-country records, had that kind of dark edge to them. Is that more explicit here on this record?
There's a punchiness, lyrically and musically. So you have in the title of the album, you know, The Harder I Fight. And there is this sense of her having gone through depression, as she's spoken about, and coming out kind of all guns blazing. And particularly... in this song, Man. On the last record, there was a song about being a killer whale, and the chorus went, I'm a man eater. So she was like playing with gender and violence to an extent. And in this one, it's much more kind of emphatic. And she says in Man, you didn't know what a man was till I showed you.
This is from the new album by singer Nico Case.
I'm a man, that's what you are. We'll be right back.
That is Nico Case and a song called Man from her new record called The Worst Things Get, The Harder I Fight, The Harder I Fight, The More I Love You. Sophie Harris loving this one, the music writer of Time Out New York here with us in the Soundcheck studio. A lot of people will know Nico Case from her long time on-again, off-again relationship with the New Pornographers.
Indeed.
And Carl Newman from the New Pornographers is one of a number of guests on this record.
Yes, yes, he is indeed. And he actually opened for her at her Radio City show last week. So, yeah, lots of collaborators, but still, really, it's so her record, you know, and so personal. And I think one of the things that I love so much about the way she makes music, particularly on the more mellow tracks, is she has this gift for throwing musical curveballs. And you'll think you're sort of, you know what's going on in the song. So there'll be a song where the chord progression is quite Beatles-y and like Dear Prudence. And then she just throws something in that's kind of unnerving, maybe a bit Twin Peaks-y almost, where you think, oh, okay. And that, to me, is what really distinguishes her songwriting.
You got an example of that?
I have.
What a surprise.
Funny you should ask. There's a lovely song on this record called Night Still Comes.
There are so many tools that are made from my hands, but the tide smashes all my best laid plans to send. And there's always someone to say it's easy for me, but I revenge myself all over myself. There's nothing you can say to me. You never held it.
Night Still Comes is from the new album by singer Nico Case called The Worst Things Get, The Harder I Fight, The Harder I Fight, The More I Love You. And Sophie Harris, music writer of Time Out New York, sharing some of her fall favorites with us on Soundcheck today. Group of women, solo woman, any guys on this list of yours?
Oh, heck yes. We're going to talk about Earl Sweatshirt. I've always had a real soft spot for young American hip-hop, oddly, coming from England, but there we go. And this year has been so great for mixtape rappers. You've had people like Chance the Rapper, ASAP Ferg, these people who have really caused a stir with their awesome mixtapes and then gone on to make big, fancy records. And really the star of the mixtape makers is Earl Sweatshirt, who is part three, if you like, of the Odd Future success story. So we've already had really interesting, juicy records from Odd Future's Tyler, the Creator, and then Frank Ocean,
whose
star just exploded this year. And Earl is interesting because he's kind of mysterious like Frank Ocean, but also kind of a gross teenager, you know, like Tyler. And so you get both of those on this
record. And, you know, while Odd Future was sort of breaking into the musical consciousness of the country a year or two ago, he was off the scene, right? His mom had sent him to a school in Samoa.
Yes,
exactly. For at-risk boys.
Although Although I had imagined the school in Samoa for at-risk boys to be a bit hardship hall and a bit awful, but it actually sounds quite nice. And he filled his days with, he was reading, he had a lot of therapy and swam with whales. So I think it probably
did him a lot of good. So not quite Dickens is what you're
saying. It wasn't. And I think from what he said in interviews afterwards that it did him a lot of good. And it also made him into this kind of folk hero.
Right.
You know, was a year and a half he was gone.
There was that Free Earl campaign. You know, people
so
were
so good.
Yeah. So here is Earl Sweatshirt.
Mm-hmm.
The album's called Doris, and Sophie, there's not a lot on this record we can play on the radio.
There's not. There really isn't. And I was listening to it over the weekend and thinking, how are we going to play it? And I was imagining where the bleeps would come. Although he did perform one track from it, Burgundy, on the Jimmy Fallon show, and because he was rapping it live, he could self-edit. Mm. But I believe we found a little snippet.
It's a little snippet from the song called Chum, but we'll still have an FCC license at the other end of it. So that's what we're going to hear.
Something sinister to it. Pendulum swinging slow, a degenerate moving through the city with criminal stealth. Welcome to enemy turf. Harder than immigrants work. Golf is just in my shirt. Get up off the pavement. Brush the dirt up off my psyche. 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 Probably been 12 years since my father left. Left me fatherless. And I just used to say I hate him in dishonest jest. When honestly I miss this nigga like when I was 6. And every time I got the chance to say it, I would swallow it. 16, I'm hollowing tolerance. Skip shots of storm now.
Chum is the name of the song from Earl Sweatshirt from the album Doris. There's kind of a story in this record, right?
Oh,
his story.
It's his story, and you know, and there's references to the fact that his dad was is a South African poet. He lost his grandma also. So there's a lot going on about his life. And he said of this record, "I'm just trying to make pretty music."
Mm.
And it is kind of pretty, you know, difficult to play on the radio as it is. There's a real swing to this record. It's very mellow and it grooves, you know.
All right. So Earl Sweatshirt's album, Doris, Nico Case's record, The Worse Things Get, The Harder I Fight, The Harder I Fight, The More I Love You, and the Haim record called Days Are Gone. Three albums to fill your fall with great music, courtesy of Sophie Harris, music writer for Time Out New York. Sophie, good to see you again.
Yeah, lovely to see you.
Hey, you. Oh, remember me? Remember love? Remember trying to stay together my time? Oh, you took it all. You tried to see. You tried to bring yourself up without involving.
A little more from the band Haim, one of the new releases Sophie Harris has picked for us. That song's called Forever. Keen observers of human behavior sometimes remark that everybody wants to be somebody, but only 5 New York musicians can call themselves Kneebody. That's K-N-E-E, body. We'll get them to explain that name in a moment, and we're going to hear them play live next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The band Kneebody is notoriously tough to pin down genre-wise. The group has been around since 2001, along the way picking up a Grammy nomination in the classical crossover category. They've worked with trumpeter Dave Douglas and garnered plenty of young fans. But whatever you want to call the music on their latest album, electric jazz, jazz rock, hip-hop meets jazz, it is by turn danceable, introspective, and ear-catching. Kneebody is here with me in the studio today. They're going to play a couple of tunes off that new album, which is called The Line. Here's one called Lowell. This is Kneebody, live on Soundcheck.
Thank you.
That's the band Kneebody, live on Soundcheck with a song called Lowell. You will find it on the band's latest record called The Line, which is out now. Meet the members of Kneebody: Ben Wendell on sax, Shane Ensley playing the trumpet, Adam Benjamin behind the keyboard, Kaveh Rastegar playing the bass, Nate Wood behind our drum kit here in the Soundcheck studio, and Ben and Shane pulling up microphones. Guys, good to see you.
Hi, John.
Ben, let me ask you the name. I mean, I've been playing Kneebody albums on the air for a number of years now, and I've never quite figured out Kneebody. What does that mean?
Well, it was a nonsense word that an ex-girlfriend of mine came up with, but the impetus behind
it... Was she an ex-girlfriend when she came up with the word?
Thank you. No. We were just looking for a band name that was short, memorable, and would not indicate the style of music that we played.
Uh-huh.
So
from day one, you didn't want to have a name that would pin you down to one genre or another.
Yeah.
So what genre of music do you play?
I think you've done a better job of describing it than us. It's always been kind of hard for us. So.
And Shane, now the piece you guys just played, Lowell, that's one of Adam's works, right?
That's right.
How does it work? You all write. Do you bring like a skeleton into the studio and then everybody sort of gloms onto it somehow? How does that go?
No, our process has been each person, individual, bring in their piece completed, basically.
Really?
And then we take the time to learn them by ear, even though all of us, you know, went to school and read music and all that. But for this band, we've kind of stuck to a more garage band approach, and we learn everything one part at a time and try and really just internalize it from the beginning.
Garage band, yes, but also like a chamber ensemble where, you know, you bring a finished product to the band. It's not like, all right, here's the piece, now figure out a bass part or figure out a drum part.
Yeah, the most we kind of do together is adjustments, like maybe, oh, this section's going on too long, and we'll kind of decide to, you know, tailor the piece after it's in, but it's a finished piece when the individual composer brings it in.
And one of the things that you have to kind of work out is electronics, where and when and if they will be used. So, like, I think people might have thought that was largely an acoustic piece that we just heard, until at the very end, Ben, we could hear, for example, your horn sort of trailing off in the distance in a way that we probably couldn't do acoustically.
Yeah, it's been a really fun part of this band. It started acoustic, and then slowly but surely we started bringing in effects, and it's become more of an electroacoustic band. And a lot of those sounds we're just improvising or doing to taste based on what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Now, the album The Line, this is your fourth studio record, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it true it's the first one you've done in a proper studio with a producer and all of that?
Yeah, basically, like the first couple were just in our drummer and keyboard player Adam's house with everyone kind of stuffed into different closets and rooms and whatnot. And then we had one studio that we went to that was a really nice studio, but sort of in someone's house. It was in actually Nate's father's house. Really nice studio. But this was the first time on this album that we went to a studio that's been on the map for a while. It's a place called Sunset Sound in Hollywood. It's a really great studio.
And what does it do for or to the band when there's an additional set of ears, when you have an outside producer suddenly, you know, kind of steering the ship?
Kind of helps just, I think it's just, there's so much involved in just making an album, and you can get overwhelmed pretty fast and not kind of get too close to the mirror. So it really helps to have just an outside person that's not as emotionally, you know, caught up in what's happening at the moment to say, you know, that was a great take, like, let's move on.
Right.
You know, so.
And is that generally the way it works? Is like you guys want to just keep going and take 273, you know?
I'm not sure. I mean, we this was a fast and furious recording. We did it in 2 days, which is actually pretty indicative of a jazz album. But you know, there's not a lot of time to be able to do 30 takes anyways. So.
Okay. Well, we're speaking with members of the band Kneebody, which is why in the last 60 seconds you've heard garage rock, chamber music, and jazz all mentioned, and electronics. The next song is called Cha-Cha. Once again, Kneebody, live on Soundcheck. Thank you. That, once again, is the band Kneebody, live in the Soundcheck studio with a song called Cha-Cha. The band's latest album, their fourth, is called The Line. It is out now. We met sax player Ben Wendell and trumpeter Shane Ensley before. Joining me at the mic now, Adam Benjamin, keyboard player.
Good to be with you.
And Kaveh Rastegar, who plays the bass.
Hi there, hi there.
Nate Wood is the drummer, so he doesn't get to talk, apparently.
That's right.
Who wrote that?
Shane wrote that song, okay. Our trumpet player.
Tell him that's not a cha-cha.
Yeah.
Now, you guys have kind of a young fan base. Do you know where you're drawing them from? Are they jazz fans? Are they from the jam band scene? Do you know that?
We want to know the jam band scene. The jam band scene? No, I mean, I think we, you know, Adam can answer this too. Like,
I think a lot of jazz fans, actually. Yeah. Primarily jazz fans to start out with, and a smattering of, you know, folks who maybe follow a lot of indie rock bands or jam bands. But it's been interesting to us, actually. A lot of our fans so far have come out of music schools, people studying jazz, mm-hmm. people studying chamber music. We're trying to expand beyond that. But to me, the fact that so many jazz fans enjoy our music kind of validates my feeling that this is jazz music, certainly in the eye of the beholder. But it feels very related to that tradition to me.
Well, it's jazz adjacent, at least.
Right. Yeah.
The band is called Kneebody. Their latest album's called The Line. It is out now. And guys, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for coming and playing for us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Tomorrow on the show, Tunde Adebimpe of the Brooklyn Indie Heroes TV on the Radio joins us with his side project, the improbably named Higgins Waterproof Black Magic Band. They'll play live in the studio. Plus, the sax-blasting music director of the Saturday Night Live band, Lenny Pickett, talks about his 29th year on the job. And one of the greatest American songwriters is the subject of a new documentary called AKA Doc Pomus. We'll talk with the filmmaker and the daughter of the late Doc Pomus. That's next time. Join me right here for all of that tomorrow night. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.